Hey guys, what's up? It's me, William, the Opinion Updike, here with Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm coming at you again today with another solo pod as Charles is out of action at the moment. But it's okay. I got a heck of a show lined up for you today. I'm going to kick things off with a recap of last night's loss to the Pacers, which was, you know, I predicted a win, which was overly optimistic. It was definitely a young-looking team out there, but there was a lot of fun stuff to watch. A bunch of upside. I'm actually like really excited about this team, so can't wait to get into that recap for you, sorry. And then I'm going to jump into a preview for Sunday's matchup against the Celtics. And then we're going to finish things off with our Friday segment, which is the Pacific Division Power Rankings, in case you didn't know. And then everybody's favorite segment, Love, Marry, Kill. So stay tuned for all of that coming up right about now. All right, so Clippers played the Pacers last night. It ended up losing 92-116, which was a pretty big L, but you know, at least it wasn't by 42. Am I right? There was some stuff to like, despite it, you know, not being maybe the most competitive game through and through. Indy really pretty handedly had this one in their pocket, essentially from like the end of the first on, and it never really got within striking distance after the second half. But that's to be expected. There was definitely some growing pains. It was the first game that Gallo was back. He didn't end up playing big minutes. But, you know, it's like I've been saying, I'm just happy that these young guys are getting a chance to kind of run the helm and be in charge of this offense, show what they can do defensively. And, you know, really, I think that ties into being the best pitch moving forward. You know, we want to show potential superstars that could come here that, hey man, these young guys, like, while they may not be, you know, completely at their peak yet, they've got a lot of raw talent, a lot of ability there, a lot of basketball IQ, and, you know, these guys could possibly be extending your career with, you know, you reaching your prime. At the same time, these guys are really becoming solid players. You know, that Venn diagram has like a very has a very solid intersection where they're both going to be thriving. So just piggybacking off of that, we did only have 9 guys, which is really difficult. So this game was, you know, a little bit of a fluke in from a lineup standpoint, just because of all the trades that had happened. You know, obviously this wasn't the same team who played our last game, and it will not be the same team as plays in Boston, most likely. Assuming that everyone is cleared, which I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be. But just a few quick notes, I guess, on this loss. Gallo had his triumphant return, as I said at the beginning of the podcast. He ended up finishing with 12-5-2 in less than 20 minutes. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say the strongest man in the NBA is back. I couldn't be more excited. I love seeing Gallo out there. We're really happy to have him back. Lou Will, the other great vet, hashtag retire his jersey. I'm ready for it. You're ready for it. Lou Will finished with 10-2-2 in only 17 minutes. I'm really glad these guys are able to get some rest. I'm not sure how much that trend is going to be able to continue. I would assume that these guys are going to have a probably a lighter load to a certain degree. Obviously, you know, these are two guys who are great competitors. And, you know, it would be a shame to do the tanking thing and bench them. I don't really see us doing that. I think that, you know, the whole goal with this rebuild and all of our moves at the trade deadline is still to stay competitive. You know, we don't just want to flounder. We don't want to put out a poor product. And I don't really see us doing that. I think that, you know, while we may win less games than we would have with the, you know, the roster that we started the year with, we're still going to be competitive. And I think that this team is still going to be fun to watch. Last night, I still thought was very fun to watch. But anyways, moving on. Trez, the heart and soul of this squad, played 30 minutes, finished with 19-1-4, which is really perplexing. The only single rebound there. But, you know, the Pacers actually shot pretty well. I think they ended up finishing with about a 56% field goal percentage, which was closer to 60, I believe, at the start of the fourth. So it dwindled a little bit as they had kind of their second reserves in there. And they were able to convert at like 41% from three. So, you know, I guess there were less boards for the taking for sure. But still, you know, you expect him to see a lot more. So as I predicted in the game preview, I mean, not that I'm like a fortune teller or anything. It was pretty straightforward. All the rookies and, you know, second year guys, all the young guys were going to have to get big minutes in this one. And, you know, they all really did. And most of them looked pretty solid. Let me run through some of these performances. Sendarius finished with 30 minutes on the night, and he added 5, 3, and 2, but he did also add 5 steals and had the second best plus minus on the entire team. So, you know, he's a solid defender. We know that. You know, it was more of what we know he can be. And he's still definitely developing. He hasn't really shouldered this amount of minutes since last season. You know, when we, due to injury woes and stuff, obviously he had a much heavier load. Motley ended up with the second most minutes on the night. Hashtag more Motley. Ended with 10 and 7. He was a little shaky converting around the rim. Only finished about 4 of his 10 field goals. Did also take a shot from 3, which you never really want to see. Maybe someday, you know, maybe he'll turn into that unicorn type center at some point. But you know, he's still got like that crazy energy, which is a double-edged sword. It's awesome when it works, and it's great. It's great to see that out there. You'd love to have a player like that, but there's also like this kind of anxiousness or like a desire to maybe be doing a little bit too much, which I think, you know, is only going to improve as he gets more time. He's going to get more settled into himself. He's going to get more settled into situations, and I just don't see him not improving. You know, he can only go up. This team, I feel like, despite, you know, being mostly young guys, is all upside for me. You know, their development can only improve this team. Jerome had nearly 28 minutes, which, you know, was solid for him. Great to see him doing that. He did not have a good night. He ended up shooting 2 of 13. He was able to finish with 7, 2, and 3. So, you know, about what you would expect from a rookie guy who's, you know, expected to be like a rotation piece. But I do like that he's out there. I like that he's getting more minutes. He ended up getting more minutes than Shea, which I'm not going to get into too much. I feel like I beat this horse to death. But once again, Shea got kind of benched for a significant period of time. And maybe, you know, maybe it's necessary. Maybe this style of coaching is working. In my opinion, it doesn't really seem to be. I don't know how that can't rattle your confidence. Shea is such a competent scorer, and he's so silky and so smooth that I hate to see him hesitating. I hate to see him hesitating going to the basket. I hate to see him getting blocked at the rim when he's not, you know, like I feel like fully engaged or fully committed. And I do think that some of that comes down to strictly confidence. You got to have confidence out there. And, you know, it's definitely hard to build up for these young guys. But he did finish with 8, 5, and 3. Not the strongest performance, which is a little bit of a concern. But, you know, he hasn't been playing this kind of this many minutes for the most part. So I'm hoping that those numbers can improve. You know, I really want him to be able to make, you know, even tiny incremental progress as the season goes on. And then I think that, you know, next year when he comes back, having gotten that experience under his belt and even a little bit of incremental progress, that he'll be able to make a more exponential leap, possibly, you know, to a level of like a De'Aaron Fox or something. Obviously, they're not comparable players. De'Aaron Fox is, you know, has insane athleticism and speed that's never really been a part of Shea's game, but I do think that he's going to only be more solid. Tywall had 24 minutes he finished with 7, 2, and 3, and he did have the best plus minus of the night. That might be due to his minutes coming more against second unit guys. I don't know. Still great for him. We haven't been seeing a whole lot of Tywall in the lineup, despite having a few solid performances and a few stinker performances. Hasn't been the most consistent. That's why this time is going to be so crucial and so clutch. That's why I'm just not that down on this team or this loss. I feel like, you know, as long as these guys are getting experience, I've been preaching it all season long. As long as these guys are getting those reps in, this team can only get better. They definitely looked like a young team last night, you know, exactly what you would expect. They were overwhelmed by the superior defense, and they weren't really able to convert on some baskets that looked like really good opportunities. It's like that thing when you watch young teams where they have some really good looks, and there's a lot of almost good plays, you know, where it's close but not quite the whole cigar or whatever the saying is. So I think that they overall, you know, it wasn't a total drubbing, which was great. They didn't take an L as hard as the Whittier Lakers did. So, I mean, I think that in and of itself is a win. Chuck had a few notes from the game. He was wondering if we could maybe see Zubats on the floor with Motley and Delgado or Trez or one of the three, rather. Or we could even play like a weird bully ball kind of lineup with three guards and two kind of big guys down low. I'm really fond of this idea. I'm curious to see how Zubats is going to fit into everything. Obviously, it's going to be great to have a traditional size center, once again, a young guy. And I'm curious to see what he can do. You know, it is a contract year for him, and unfortunately, he's only going to be getting half a season to show the Clippers what he's really going to be able to do. However, you know, if he performs well, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a part of this team moving forward. It's always great to have youth, as I feel like I repeat to death on this podcast. So Charles also wanted to comment that Gallo, Trez, and Zubats is a huge front court. They have okay spacing with Gallo. I don't know if I love that lineup, to be perfectly honest. I'd be willing to try it out in spurts and see what happens. It could be overwhelming for smaller teams just from like a length perspective, but I don't know that there's a dynamic aspect to that lineup that makes it that successful. Charles also wanted to throw out Dame Delgado, hashtag Dame Delgado, which is give me in Spanish, so give us more Delgado. He was great. He had his first points of his NBA career, his first first minutes, obviously, his first boards. He finished with 3 and 4 and a pretty solid first showing, and he made one of his two free throw attempts, so 50%, not bad. Can only improve from there. All in all, a great showing for Delgado. Love to see him out there. We've been waiting on it all season. It's time to Dame Delgado. Delgado, as I'm going to start calling him, because, you know, he's already the greatest in my eyes. Anyways, that's all I got for the Clippers Pacers. I'm going to jump into a quick preview of the Celtics game coming up on Saturday, and then I'm going to get into our Friday segments. So all that coming up next. So Clippers Celtics preview. They're playing Saturday at 5. I think I might have misquoted this at Sunday at the beginning of the podcast. Please disregard that. I'm an idiot. And so just a few quick notes looking at this from a bird's eye view. Celtics have slipped to the fourth spot in the East, but they are 8-2 in their last 10 games. It's impressive that they're really gelling and you know, kind of rickrolling through the league right now, despite all the AD kind of talk and stuff. I know that it's got to be so hard if you're on a team that's involved in those discussions, especially for players, because, you know, it's got to make you wonder what you're worth to these franchises. And that's why I love that the Clippers have done a really good job this season of kind of playing their cards close to their chest. And, you know, the trade noise has moved in silence for the most part from us. So, you know, that I really respect that as an organization. I think that does a service to your players, and it like veers away from the sensationalism that I know that the NBA as an organization wants. You know, they want this to be a 12 month a year league. They want trades to be just as integral and just as important as the game itself. And, you know, there is aspects to that and team building, and I do think it is interesting for the fans, myself included, but I like that they don't put that on their players, that they're not subjecting our squad to that kind of noise. So I respect that move. Just looking at this from a stats perspective, the Celtics currently have the 9th-ranked offense in the league and the 5th-ranked defense, and we currently have the 11th-ranked offense, which is our best aspect of the team thus far, and the 21st-ranked defense. Now, the team has undergone a huge amount of turnover in a short amount of time, so these numbers will most likely change. However, this is going to be an incredibly hard matchup. I mean, they're top 10, they're top 5 in defense and top 10 team offensively. I mean, that's just the makings of a team that's ready to make a deep playoff run. So they did, however, lose to those pesky Whittier Lakers at home due to a last second shot from Rondo. Who'd have thunk it? Clutch Rondo in the garden. So I think that they're going to come out actually pretty irritated after that loss at home. It's going to be a very difficult game, but let's get into what I think we need to do to win. So one thing that we can do is move very slowly. Their vision is completely based on movement, and I think that if we are able to move efficiently, but with a very non-conspicuous manner, they might not be able to see us at all. All joking aside, though, we got to get to the line a lot. I think that that's going to be the biggest thing. It's going to be so much harder with young guys. I feel like taking contact and stuff is something that is inherent for some guys, but I think it's something that you definitely get more comfortable with as you get a little bit more experience, especially as you just gain the size. Jerome looks really good again at the Pacers game, like being able to kind of get in the lane, and he has like a really stout build. Despite maybe not being as tall as Shea, he has a very stout build that I think is kind of built to take some contact. So I would love to see us get to the line. They're not a high free throw attempt team. I believe they're 29th in the league. So this could be a way that we could irk out a victory. This is one of the few inefficiencies that they have that we could truly exploit. As to whether we're able to capitalize on that, time is really only going to be able to tell. It's very, very hard. Another thing that we're going to have to do is just control the ball well. The Celtics are top five in blocks and steals. And, last night we didn't do the greatest job of controlling the ball. We had 21 total turnovers, which wasn't that big of a deal because Indiana only also had 19. But we can't expect the Celtics to do something like that. They're much more... what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of staunch with the ball. They're not giving it up a whole lot. They're not making bad passes and bad plays. They're an intelligent team with a mix of veterans and great young talent. So that's really going to be difficult. But so let's get into what could go wrong. I mean, honestly, a lot could go wrong. I think that we could get pretty easily overwhelmed by their defense, as we were even against the Pacers, who are also a very solid team. I think they might be second in the league in defense. So they, props to Nate over there, coach of the Pacers. Great work on that. But I think that we could easily be overwhelmed by their defense. I think that playing in Boston is very hard. They obviously have really loud fan base, which I think could get into the heads of some of our younger guys. We haven't played there yet this season. We'll see how Shea does in that type of environment. I think that he's getting better and better at dealing under pressure. I think he just needs, the looser leash that we've talked about, or the kind of freedom to make mistakes and just kind of play his game. He needs that opportunity. So there's a few key matchups that I'd like to get into for this. So basically Gallo versus everyone. He's probably going to be bearing a large scoring load, depending on how we end up playing this one. I'm not exactly sure who's going to be guarding him. I would guess that Marcus Morris would spend the majority of his time there now that he's been in the starting lineup more. So I do think that that is favorable for Gallo due to his height advantage and also his strength advantage. That's just a given. So, we're going to need a big game from Gallo if we want to eke out this win. Another one that I'm excited to see, I just have no idea how much they'll be on each other or like how much time we'll even get to see of them. But Zubats versus Horford. Zubats is a big traditional size center. And I'm pretty sure he's going to end up getting his first start with us that Saturday against the Celtics there. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I really have no idea how he's going to look on this team, but I'm curious to see what the youth can bring to the veteran statesman in Horford. I'm also excited to see Taiwall or Sendarius, whoever ends up getting the start there at the three versus Tatum. They're both pretty solid defensively. I would give Sin probably a little bit of an advantage there, but I'm excited to see if either one of them will be able to really give him pressure and really make him have a hard time. He's had a little bit of an up and down this sophomore season, but still a great player, very solid all around. And, neither Ty or Sin is completely developed offensively yet. Ty has had some flashes. Sin had some flashes in the summer league. It hasn't really carried over to the regular season yet. But we'll see. I'm also wondering if we might see Garrett Temple at the small forward position. I believe he'll be available for play. He might have an injury actually that's still lingering. I cannot remember exactly on that one. So feel free to tweet at us if I'm wrong and being an idiot on that. But he plays the majority of his minutes at the shooting guard position. I believe around 68%, with the other 32% coming from the small forward position. And as I've stated throughout the season, obviously with Luke out and there was issues with Mike Scott, the forward position has been a little bit paper thin, especially in that second lineup. So I'm curious to see how much we're going to get to see of him. I wonder what he'll look like against Tatum if they end up going against one another, or he might end up being going up against Gordon Hayward if they're both coming off the bench. So I'm just excited to see what he's going to do. Overall, my key match takeaway from this matchup is I'm just really excited for this new look Clippers team. I really, really want to see what they can do. Obviously, it's going to be a different look, but we'll just have to see what goes down. Jamichael Green also is a little bit of an upgrade from Mike Scott, so I'm curious to see how he's going to fit into the rotation. As for predictions for this game, I really, really don't want to do this, but I guess for posterity, I'm going to give it a shot. I was obviously very wrong in my prediction against the Pacers last night. Don't at me. My bad. So I think that this game could really end up being a nightmare scenario where we don't manage to get into triple digits. I'm going to go with 99-112 Celtics. I hope that we can keep it closer than that. I really, really just don't know, though. So coming up next, I'm going to do the Friday segment, which is the Pacific Division Power Rankings, and then Love, Marry, Kill. All right, so in the Pacific Division, we got a lot of movement. I think that there were some teams that were pretty active at the trade deadline, obviously some that stayed pat, the number one of which, the Warriors, I still have at the top. I don't think there's really any disputing that. They made zero moves at the deadline. Not even sure what they could do at this point. There's been discussion of a possible buyout of maybe a center, possibly even Gortat off the buyout market. So I don't know. I think that that'd be interesting. I hope that Totter maybe gets a ring. I guess that'd be pretty cool. You know, he's a vet of this league and had a very long streak of consecutive games, which is impressive. So at the number two spot, I'm going Sacramento Kings. I love what they were able to do at the trade deadline. I'm going to dig a little bit more into that later in my Love, Marry, Kill segment. However, just a brief overview. They ended up picking up Alec Burks and Harrison Barnes, who I think Harrison Barnes is going to add a lot of value for them on the wing. And I think Alec Burks is a sneaky good pickup too, especially for what they gave up in Iman Shumpert, who really was, it seemed like he conducted himself like a true professional in Sacramento. You know, best of luck to him. So at number three, I've got us, your Los Angeles Clippers. I would say that we had the best trade deadline out of any of these teams. I'm just going power rankings in terms of how I think the teams are going to perform probably over the next stretch. And I think that we might take a dip. I think that we might end up under the Kings in the rankings, which wouldn't be that big of a deal. It wouldn't be that sad. A big shout out to the sister Kings. I kind of hope they can make the playoffs if it's not going to be us. But, you know, if it is us, heck yeah to that too. So at number four, I have those Whittier Lakers that keep coming up. I don't know. Well, I'm going to get into those trade deadline moves here in the Love, Marry, Kill, but not exactly. It did not pan out how they wanted. I'm sure the players are very disgruntled. It seems like it's going to be a pretty hard situation moving forward for those guys, so we'll just have to see what happens. Number five, bottom of the Pacific Division, is those Suns. They made some moves that, once again, I'll dig into later, but I don't really see it moving the needle too much for them. So we'll see what Tyler Johnson can do over there. Maybe he can help out Devin Booker a little bit. He's not really even a true point guard in the prototype that the Suns need right now. I feel like the Suns wouldn't have been at the bottom of the Pacific Division this whole season had they just taken Luka. But, you know, what are you going to do? Hindsight's 20/20, right? All right, so let's move on to Love, Marry, Kill. Today, I'm going to be loving, I'm going to be marrying, and I'm going to be killing the Pacific Division trade deadline moves. So just to recap, in case you forgot, Those Whittier Lakers traded Mike Muscala, Big Muscala, former Clipper great, for Zubats and Beasley. And they also added Reggie Bullock, who was a former Clipper, in case you didn't know. He was traded to the Suns as part of a deal with a pick that would become Jabari Bird. So I feel like we really dodged a bullet on that one. Obviously, kind of a checkered off the court stuff there happening. But, you know, Reggie Bullock is a fairly solid pickup for them. He's a, you know, he's a solid 3-point shooter, 38%. He's averaging 12, 3, and 3. I still just don't see this as moving the needle that much for them. And then we got the Kings, obviously trading Iman Shumpert for Alec Burks, who's currently averaging 11, 4, and 3, shooting 38% from 3. That's going to help those guys out, add even more spacing. And then they traded Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph for Harrison Barnes, who is, you know, a stud on the wing, 18, 4, and 1. Not the most efficient player. I'm curious to see how he's going to fit in, given the Kings' pace that they play with. You know, they're essentially just trying to run teams off the floor every single night. I don't know that Barnes is going to be able to keep up with that. He also can be a little dominant on the ball, which isn't really going to fit in with their system. But, you know, I'm confident that he can transform into a kind of catch-and-shoot guy. And then the Suns, obviously, traded off Ryan Anderson and took Wayne Ellington and Tyler Johnson. It looks like their intention is to waive Wayne Ellington, which, whatever. I don't know. It seems like an asset you could maybe do something with. And Tyler Johnson, you know, who, as I said earlier, is a point guard, but not really the point guard that they need. I would see him probably more coming off the bench, although, I don't know, the guard position there is so up in the air. And then, obviously, the Clippers did Toby for Muscala, Chandler, and Shamet, as well as netting 2 firsts, 2 seconds. Really great trade there. I think the trade that really kicked off how crazy this trade deadline got, I think that we, you know, set the precedent, and I love that this team, 2 seasons away from the big three, is, I mean, not even 2 seasons, like a season and a half, well, 1 full season. It's only been a year since the Blake Griffin trade, but in that short amount of time, we've been able to net so many assets, and we're constantly in the conversation for big free agents. It's really awesome what we've been able to do. And then we also traded Avery Bradley for Jamichael Green and Garrett Temple, who I talked about a little bit earlier in the matchup against the Celtics. And then we flipped Muscala for Zubats and Beasley, obviously waived Beasley. Really excited to see what Zubats can do. And then the Warriors made no moves. They might buy Gortat, as I said. So those are the options that we have for loving, marrying, and killing. And let's see. I am loving this fit for the. I'm loving these moves for the Kings. I want to know how this is going to work out. You know, I'm a little tentative. I'm a little nervous. I don't know if I'm ready to commit long term. I don't know if they're ready to commit long term. Barnes might have a player option on his the season after this, so I'm not sure how that will all pan out. If that is the case, obviously pretty hefty salary there. I got to marry the Clippers moves. I'm sorry. This is definitely biased. This is 100% bias. But I think even objectively, looking at what the Clippers were able to do at this trade deadline was nothing short of impressive. A-plus all around. This franchise is, you know, starting to have such a competent front office that it's really impressive to see what we're able to do. And I'm killing the Lakers, man. They did not have the trade deadline that they had expected. They did not add. I do not feel as though they added enough in Mike Muscala and Reggie Bullock. But, you know, it remains to be seen. Something is better than nothing, for sure. It wasn't really working out there. I guess we're just going to have to see what'll happen. But yeah, I think that they lost this trade deadline in that sense. And that's going to happen sometimes when you swing for the fences. But anyways, that's about all I got for today, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't be afraid to rate us. 5 stars would be awesome. If you left a little review on there, it really helps us out. As I said, I'm William the Opinion Updike. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and have a great weekend.